First question, Jason. Can you take me back to 1992 and the creation of the advanced genius theory? How did that come about?
Sure. I would say, you know, some friends of mine from high school, we were really fascinated with, you know, music was a passion for us, and we were all in bands and that sort of thing. And but, you know, we tended toward the alternative music of the day, which is not what alternative music sounds like now. But at any rate, then we kind of went back to some of the precursors, and Lou Reed being a major one of those. And so we listened to the Velvet Underground quite a bit. But then we saw sort of in the late 80s, the music that he was putting out was really just, you know, seeming to us really horrible. So then cut forward to 1992, where, you know, I'd kind of gotten out of college and I was a little older and I didn't, you know, my priorities had changed just a little bit, enough to say, you know, maybe something's going on here that I don't understand. So one day I was having pizza with my friend Britt, and we were just kind of talking about it, and we realized that maybe there's a chance that since Lou Reed was ahead of his time in the 60s and 70s, that maybe he was still ahead of his time and we were just missing it. And that's sort of where we jumped off, and a whole theory was born from that conversation.
Mm-hmm. And to quote, you touched on it there, being ahead of his time, and as the subtitle of your book is, Are They Out of Their Minds or Ahead of Their Time? And that kind of, in a nutshell, sums up the advanced genius theory. But can you tell me a bit more about it, about what exactly the theory consists of?
Sure. Well, as we expanded out on that idea, we talked about musicians and other artists and sort of thing. And there seemed to be a theme developing where we could see that there were established artists who were ahead of their time, and then everyone sort of caught up with them a little bit. And then they went off into directions that were really puzzling, especially to their initial fans. One of the great examples is Bob Dylan going electric. You know, he could have been a folk singer forever and he would have had incredible credibility and would have been a legend as it was, but it wasn't enough for him. But going electric was, you know, heresy. I mean, he was called Judas by people in the audience. You know, his biggest fans were the most hurt. And then that became sort of a theme, but then they would go to a place where then no one liked what they were doing. You know, you look at Bob Dylan's output in the 80s, you know, just maligned completely. But I think that, you know, what we started to try to understand was, you know, as we think about what taste is and what our judgment is about the quality of any artwork or anything in general, you know, it's very subjective. And when there's really no right answer, you know, my take is I would rather take Bob Dylan's word for it than mine or some critic's or the public at large, because he's been right so many times before. But you do have times where, you know, some of the advanced artists that we talk about would be Lou Reed, Bob Dylan, as we talked about. Orson Welles was another. You know, they go off on these weird things. You know, that Orson Welles' later career where he was a pitch man, basically, it looked like he had, you know, completely gone over the edge and kind of lost all artistic credibility. Yeah. But all he was doing during that time was trying to fund movies that no one else would pay for or give him the control to make.
As you point out in the book, the advanced genius theory doesn't apply just to musicians. It applies to artists, creative people of all types. And there are five guidelines that you and the co-founder, Britt Bergman, have established to determine whether or not someone qualifies as an advanced genius. Can you quickly walk us through those?
I will try to remember all five.
Okay, if not, I have a cheat. I have them written down here, so I can let you cheat.
Okay, good. Good. Yeah, it's been a little while since I've gone over the five. I think about this stuff constantly, but I think the main point is, one of the main points is that you have to be really great and innovative for 15 years at least. That's basically, you know, if we're going to take someone's word for it that they know better than we do, then they have to have some credibility, and that you build that over time. You can't just have one great album or even two great albums and expect to then get the benefit of the doubt for the rest of your life. You have to have a lot of great output. You have to turn your back on your fans, basically, which is the Bob Dylan episode, Going Electric.
Yeah, in the book you even say, it goes further than that. Yeah, not just turning your back on them, but also alienating them, which I guess your back on them leads to the alienation,
Well, the alienation comes from the fact that we love them so much, and when they turn their backs on us, then, you know, we lash out at them, you know, probably unreasonably. Another is that you have to sort of fail in a really embarrassing way.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the great?
Yeah, is that the one number five in the book? You must lose it spectacularly.
Yes,
yeah.
You lose it spectacularly. Yeah. Exactly. I think that losing it spectacularly is something that's really key, and a lot of things that people will miss. They'll say, "Well, you know, someone is really they've done something really great, and what they're doing seems advanced." But if they never really lost it, then they can't be advanced, because then they aren't taking the chances that are required of someone to become advanced.
Uh-huh.
And you know, that's part of the thing. You know, all of these artists who are advanced really go out on a limb.
Yeah,
and you're bound to go too far.
Yeah, there's a high degree of risk-taking involved in becoming an advanced mm-hmm. genius, yeah. And then the other two, you must be completely unironic and you must be unpredictable, right?
Exactly. So the unironic part is that it's sort of easy to pretend that you're something, you know, sort of making, you know, a statement about something. But, you know, Lou Reed really does love rock and roll, and he loves doo-wop and all these things. And when he pulls things out that seem embarrassing or out of character, he's not doing it as a joke. He's doing it because he loves it. One of the themes that goes through the advanced musicians is that they often use like a chorus of African American singers, women singers usually. So it's like a throwback, I guess, to religious music and that sort of thing. And that's where that came from. Then it went through soul and that sort of thing. And they love that stuff. But to us who grew up listening to Velvet Underground and all the styles of music that had rejected those earlier things, then we're like, well, how could they possibly do that? Oh, they must be kidding. But in fact, they actually love it. And then the other one, remind me what the other one was, because that's an important one.
The unpredictable and completely unironic. And I forget
exactly.
Which one you just explained.
Yeah, so unpredictable, you know, it means not doing the opposite of what is expected. It means doing something that's unexpected. You know, doing the opposite of something is just as easy as doing that thing, you know. It's if you say, I'm never going to wear white, and I wear white, then, you know, I've just done the opposite. But if I say, I'm Bob Dylan and I do all these things that lead to this credibility that I have, and then I do a Victoria's Secret commercial, well, no one could have predicted that.
Yeah, definitely not. Now, the advanced genius theory, Jason, it's not just another way of saying something is so bad that it's good, right?
Correct, absolutely. And I think that goes to the irony thing. You know,
yeah.
I'm not pretending that these things are good, although that can sometimes give you an entry into these things. You can sort of joke around and say, well, I'm going to pretend to like this or whatever, but all that really does is open your mind a little bit, and then you start to find yourself actually liking some of these things that you never thought you would.
Yeah, let's talk a bit about the path of the advanced genius. Now, before someone becomes an advanced genius, they start out as overt. What does it mean to be overt?
Overt just really means that it's clear what your intentions are. You know, when you think about someone, you know, when they start out in their career, they don't really have. They don't have usually the confidence to really be themselves, so they put on sort of a mask or a costume or something that's very easy to identify. You know, one of the great overt hallmarks would be like the green mohawk. You know, there's very little ambiguity about what you're trying to do when you have a green mohawk. And, you know, for a musician, you know, if you really want to establish yourself in a certain way, like Bob Dylan did, you know, he was very much into, well, I'm going to be the new Woody Guthrie. You know, it was very clear what he wanted to do. And then he changed into the point where you have no recognition at all of what he is. So overtness is in art is really your intentions are very clear, and you're trying to appeal to a certain type of person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then to make the transition from overt to advanced, how does a genius go about doing that?
Right. Well, it usually, you know, you kind of put your toes in the water and you evolve a little bit. You know, it seems as though, especially the people that I've followed, they have this period of popularity where they're maybe sort of figuring out who they are, and they sort of take a break from evolving, but then they do, and then all bets are off. But it does seem to be gradually, because it takes a while to break your fans' hearts and to establish something completely new. But usually you start to see them, you know, they'll change the way they dress, or they'll tackle a topic in maybe a song or a chapter or whatever it is, and it just sort of opens the door. It's similar to the jumping the shark idea, but really you're not jumping in the shark at all. It's actually you're just becoming greater. There is usually that moment. You know, if you're an original Bob Dylan fan, that moment might be going electric, or it might be when he, you know, did We Are the World, or he, you know, whatever it is, you know, use processed drums and that sort of thing. But it is, it evolves, and then it seems like people kind of come back to them as they get more and more advanced, as if they're sort of like they're looping back on themselves. So mm-hmm. they get to the point where they're so advanced that they've sort of looped, you know, the world, mm-hmm. and there they are again. And then that's when you have the so-called return to form. When
yeah.
in fact, they never lost their form.
No, it just takes their fans a while to catch up to what they're doing.
Correct.
Would that be fair to say? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. As you mentioned earlier, Jason, Lou Reed served as the inspiration for the advanced mm-hmm. genius theory. What makes Lou Reed so advanced?
Wow. What doesn't make him so advanced? well, you know, the famous statement that Brian Eno makes about the Velvet Underground, his first band, was that, you know, only 1,000 people bought the Velvet Underground records, but every single one of them started a band.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the fact that he was influential, you know, you can't question that. And he was a total, you know, completely innovative in what he did with the Velvet Underground and his earlier work. You know, the subject matter of, you know, junkies and
yeah,
prostitutes
he will.
And
yep.
all that sort Take of thing, putting it into rock and roll was just not done yet. You know, it was something that he created. He really created a sort of a genre. So then as, you know, he evolved, then he started to do some of the things that the advanced do, which is, you know, when they're interviewed, they lie all the time.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure it's part of keeping up their mystery, but it's also a certain, you know, they're protecting themselves, I would imagine, and their artistic integrity. But then as he evolved, you know, and then he got into the 70s and, you know, he lived with a transvestite for a long time and he dyed his hair blonde and he, you know, made an album called Rock and Roll Animal, and all these things just were very much, you know, unanticipated. You couldn't anticipate it going from where he was. And then as he evolved, you know, then he went through the 80s and everyone hated his music, and then all of a sudden he was good again, and then he was bad again, and then, you know, and now he's doing albums with Metallica and getting his liver transplant recently.
Yeah.
One of the things that the advanced always do is they embrace technology. So I think getting a liver transplant is sort of like the apotheosis of embracing technology.
Yeah. Is there one particular Lou Reed song that you think, Jason, makes the case for Lou being an advanced genius?
Oh, wow. On the way over here, I was listening to Street Hassle, which is just an amazingly great song, but probably everything that makes him what he is in that. The cello and strings are sort of dominate the beginning, and he tells a story of, you know, junkies and they're having sex and they die, and it's really a very sad story. But it's also sort of callously told and through different characters and that sort of thing. But then there's also, he goes into sort of a fretless bass, which is an instrument that people really like of a certain type. And that's there, and there's guitar, and his voice is sort of flat and atonal, and there's this big, long story, and it's really challenging. It's 13 minutes of a song that you're supposed to sit and listen to, and it's really a sad song. But then he also got Bruce Springsteen to come in and do a little soliloquy that was sort of a takeoff on Born to Run, which is not something you would say, oh, well, you know, Bob Dylan's going to bring Bruce Springsteen, Lou Reed's going to bring Bruce Springsteen in on this song. I mean, there's just so much in that song that makes it an amazing song, but also someone might hate it. So that's probably it in terms of like the overt and the advanced and all of that together. But if you want to hear him at his most advanced, probably Mistrial, the entire album, which is completely synthetic drum machines, all that sort of thing, where you would expect a rock and roll purist. He did nothing like that, and the album is very difficult to listen to, even for me.
Hmm. Is there a particular Bob Dylan song that really demonstrates his advanced genius?
Let me think. I think Joker Man probably is a good one, because that comes from that era of, you know, that everyone hates Bob Dylan or that era, you know, that music from there. But that song is really incredible, and you know, it's almost not the recorded version of it. It's the everything that went around that song. He actually did a performance on David Letterman where he got these new wave sort of proto-punk guys or post-punk guys who were like across the street from his practice space or where he was rehearsing, and they sort of cobbled it together, and he went on David Letterman and played it, and it was an incredibly punk rock moment. I mean, he didn't have the right harmonica in front of him. He had to sort of stop, and they just kind of, but they absolutely blew the roof off the joint, as David Letterman likes to say. And it's just really amazing because he took so many chances. I mean, there's so many ways for Bob Dylan to fail, and yet he always goes out there and does it anyway. So that's really probably not the song, but it's sort of the essence of what makes him advanced.
Okay, good. One of my favorite parts of your book was the section you wrote about Sting. You wrote that while you were in Germany many years ago, a terrible question occurred to you. Can you tell me what that question was and what made you ask yourself that question?
Well, you know, it was really, I don't remember the wording of the question, but it was a horrible idea that that maybe... the whole theory was wrong because I absolutely could not stand the music I was listening to by Sting.
You liked the Police, right?
I love the Police so much, and they fit all the categories, and Sting absolutely should be advanced. But I could not like it, and so if I don't like Sting's solo music or I don't appreciate it in an advanced way, then the whole theory unravels. So I sort of spent a couple of years of exploration there into Sting's music. And actually, when I was writing the book, you know, the question was still unresolved in my mind. So I had to listen to a lot of Sting solo music, which was not easy. mostly because, you know, in retrospect, when I think about it, the reason it's so hard is that the Police were just so good and so just right in my wheelhouse. And the things that he did later were so far away from what I really love. So that's why it was so difficult. And also his personality and all these sorts of things. I now realize it's all of a piece. But I spent a summer listening to one of his solo albums over and over and over again. And then one day...
Which one?
What was it called?
Dream of the Blue Turtle, was it?
No, it was much later than that. It was actually just a few years ago. I don't remember the name of it.
Sumner's Tales one? Not that one?
No. Far beyond that. This was in the 2000s.
Okay.
Yeah. And I realized, actually, okay, now I get it. There's a thread, at least. I can imagine liking everything that he's done. And I kind of left it at that. So I wouldn't have to actually go listen to it. It was enough that it was, you know, I was convinced. Mm-hmm. But I will say I went to go see him do the classical or the, you know, the he did much of his hits, but with an orchestra, which is a fairly advanced thing to do. Because A, the advanced love to play their hits in different ways. And the reason they do that is that they don't hold them, you know, they're not sacred to them. And that's what makes them great artists. I mean, you can't be great if things are sacred to you. You have to be able to blow it up. And even though they know their fans might say, oh, I want to hear it exactly like the record.
Well, that's what the record's for, though. That's probably what they think. Well, if you want you just stay and listen to the record. Yeah. So is that question still unresolved, the Sting question?
I don't think so. Okay. I can see it. I liked it enough that I'm okay with it.
Okay.
I also recognize that, you know, he is so more, so much more sophisticated than I am musically, that it's almost, you know, how can I even judge?
You know,
I might not love it. I might wish that he was doing more like the Police, but, you know, that's not my choice. It's his.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite advanced genius from outside the world of music, or a couple of favorites?
I think Orson Welles. I mean, that's the one that I always go back to because there's just so much about him. I mean, he achieved so much when he was young, and he's so universally seen as a failure. But if you read about him and what he was doing after, and you know, there are canisters of film out there that I just would love to see put together. And I know that, you know, Inherit the Wind. That's the famous movie. But he was making a movie for years and years and years, and it was just sounds incredibly fascinating, and the people that he got involved. But, you know, but then he was a pitch man for, you know, a cheap wine and,
Palm
you know,
Sun,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And doing the, you know, he was on The Muppets.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about his appearance on The Muppets, though, is that he plays a movie producer, which is the exact person that destroyed his career, basically. Huh. You know, I mean, he could have done, you know, when he was doing Magnificent Ambersons, you know, they tore up his film and they recut it as he was off in Mexico. And, you know, the fact that he would leave without it being cut, edited, I have no understanding of that also. So, you know, that's just the advance for you. But I just love to read about some of the things. And, you know, Powers Booth told this story about performing with Orson Welles in a movie. And Orson Welles was supposed to be some character, and they said, well, he's in makeup. He has to get a prosthetic nose to be in character. He says he has to be in character. And he said and Powers Booth said when he showed up, the prosthetic nose looked exactly like his regular nose. So go figure. And Marlon Brando, I think, is probably tied for mm-hmm. second there. Because he said, you know, speaking of not taking things as sacred, he said, you know, someone showed up at my door once a year and gave me $3 million, I'd never make a movie again. But, you know, they gave me $3 million to do a movie, so that's what I do. Mm-hmm. But even as crazy as he was, he did amazing things off the screen. You know, he was involved in hostage negotiations on Indian reservations, and you know, he was helping this island that was very you know, they were very poor, and he was helping them out. And excuse me, there are all these different things that he did that were so far beyond, you know, acting and being a star. And you know, and he was made fun of for who he was, but you know, he certainly was an individual.
Yeah. I can't help but notice, Jason, that we've only been talking about men. Are there any women that qualify as advanced geniuses?
I'm asked that frequently.
Yeah.
My wife is one of the people who asked. She's not advanced, but that's not bad.
Or is she?
You can't live with an advanced person.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's, you know, yeah. But at any rate, yeah, I think that there are women who are advanced. You know, as I write in the book, you know, it's my fault, really, that I haven't listened to more music by women. I am a man, and I probably have leaned that way just for whatever reason. But also the rules might be a little bit different. You know, I'm asked the question about, you know, I deal mostly with rock and roll artists also, and people ask me about hip-hop and things like that. It's like, well, I don't know. The rules are a little different, you know. And for the musicians, the rock and roll musicians, they all wear black sunglasses. They all wear... they wear leather jackets, they sell out, they do all these things. But like for hip-hop, that's what you do when you're overt. So, you know, everything's crazy. But as far as women are concerned, you know, I think that Madonna is a great possibility, but I don't know that she really embarrassed herself. You know, she didn't really lose it. You know, one of the things that I say to people often is that women might just have better sense, you know. And so it's not a bad thing that they're not advanced. And I'm certainly not saying that they aren't advanced, you know, that there aren't genius women artists. You know, I think Patti Smith is another woman who might have been an advanced artist, in that she, you know, she left. She left music to go raise a family, which is about as unpunk rock as you could be. But then she came back, and, you know, she kind of came back into favor. But there is a great clip of her singing You Light Up My Life on a children's show on YouTube that I highly recommend you're checking out.
Okay, I will do that. What kind of reaction has the theory received?
Mostly positive. I would say that, you know, the people that, I have a Twitter account and Facebook, and, you know, people, the thing that I hear most from people is they thank me for allowing them or giving them sort of a tool to open their minds a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is if you start to think, well, maybe this is okay, and you know, start challenging what's okay and what's not, you just expand what you expose yourself to. And that can only be a good thing. Even if you don't like it, just, you know, experiencing it and maybe, you know, having a moment where it might have been okay or might have been a good thing, just expands your world a little bit.
Yeah.
There are people who get really upset when I tell them about the theory, or they've read it, and they say, you're crazy. You know, Paul McCartney can't possibly be good anymore, and on and on and on. And then, like another day, they'll come up to me and they'll say, well, is Peter Gabriel advanced? And then it's like, and then finally, when they start to get it, it becomes, you know, something that it's not as challenging as it first appears.
Mm-hmm. In the foreword to your book, Chuck Klosterman writes that the advanced genius theory is in many ways a criticism of criticism. It's almost always pro-artist and eviscerates the notion of good taste. What do you think of Chuck's comment?
I think that's very true. There's a reason why Chuck is as successful as he is. He's pretty astute. You know, I mean, it's you know, when, you know, I'm a musician, and, you know, when I read criticism of music by a non-musician, I tend to sort of turn my nose up a little bit. I don't think that it's invalid, the criticism of someone. I just think it's less valid than someone who really knows what they're talking about. And by knowing what you're talking about is you have a true understanding of the process of creating music and that sort of thing. It's perfectly fine to judge music and say, well, I enjoy this or I didn't enjoy it, and that's fine. But the real point is that, you know, Bob Dylan, for instance, you know, this guy's made some of the greatest records anyone's ever heard. He also knows more about music than just about anybody. I mean, if you were to sort of put together all of his influences and all the things that he knows about in music, you know, it would far outweigh just about anything that anyone would say. So the combination of being that great of an artist and to be that knowledgeable seems to me makes your average critic, you know, not worth anything. Why would I possibly listen to their opinion compared to Bob Dylan's? I realize that it's difficult to judge your own work, but I also know that Bob Dylan and people like Bob Dylan, the advanced, have also judged their own work in the past effectively. So they have that background. But I'm all for critics. But I think a lot of times they prefer, you know, they're more interested in writing, you know, rather than a true criticism of something.
Yeah.
And also, you know, as a means of expression, it's limited in many, many, many ways, not least of which is you have to actually get people to sign off on the review that you're going to do and try to sell magazines or whatever it is, page views.
Yeah. Final question, Jason. What is in it for us to add the Advanced Genius Theory to our thinking toolkit?
Well, I would say that it's going to expand your world. It could change your life. It could make you like people that you would have never liked before. It can take that, you know, the you know, popular culture just rains down things on us, and it's merciless. And there are things like Real Housewives and things like that that are so painful. But if you could, you know, sort of see it from someone else's objective or perspective and say, you know, that's okay. I might not like it, but I don't have to be angry about it. I don't have to see it as a sign of the apocalypse. It's just a TV show. And you might actually find some things, you know, not that far off the spectrum, but it might, you know, expand your, you know, what you appreciate.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty nice thing to do.
Yeah. It might make us more open-minded, basically, about not just music and art, but about things in general.
Absolutely. You know, there are people that we reject just because they wear different clothes, you know, and you just realize what you miss, especially as you get older and you're sort of, if you have children and you have to mix with people that you would have never met before, and you realize, wow, I was really very close-minded. Even when I thought of myself so liberal or so open-minded, I really wasn't at all. And one of the way that you go about things is, you know, in the advanced way to listen to music, say, or to read a book or look at a painting or whatever, watch a movie, is not, you know, tell me why I should like this or why I shouldn't hate this. It's, you know, how can I like it?
Mm-hmm.
And that when you start from that beginning, then life becomes more pleasant.
Yeah, opens up a whole new world of possibilities. Jason, thank you so much. This was wonderful.
My pleasure.
Great.